The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hi, and welcome to a Friday. This week seemed to have gone on forever. It was just one of those really long, interminable weeks. But here we are. We made it to Friday, and oh boy, there's a lot going on. CPAC got started today, and that's its own category of weird. In fact, weird is the topic for today. Let me first tell you, and let me promote the other show. I filled in for Brad Friedman last night. We do it again tonight. And that show airs on the Progressive Voices Network at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Or you can get it, you know, as a podcast from bradblog.com. It'll be uploaded there, I don't know, sometime before 7 Eastern, because I'm pretty much done with it. Ian Millhauser from Vox News joins me there, not Fox, but Vox, to talk about two Supreme Court cases that are going to be heard on Tuesday. Yeah, two cases Supreme Court will hear that could put the final nails in the coffin of the Voting Rights Act. So that's what we talk about on Brad's show. We do have some moments of levity. I think you'll enjoy it after the stress you'll get from listening to this show and the interview with Ian Millhauser. You'll want to stay for the last segment on Brad's show because it's fun and we get to laugh. On this show, Digby joins me today. Now, usually when Digby comes on with me, we go live. As my standard format is right at the bottom of the hour, I get the guest on and we have the whole last half hour of the show. And every time I talk to Digby, I always, when we get to the end of the segment, I'm like, this was too short. We need more time. Well, today, as luck would have it, Digby wasn't available to come on live. So it's now 5:02 Eastern. At 3 o'clock this afternoon is when I rung her up, called her, and we started taping. We were going to talk for about 30 minutes. We went for almost a whole hour talking about everything under the sun. Well, the situation we're in now. So I'm warning you that we talk about where are the Republican parties today. We talk about what's going on at CPAC. You'll hear it, but I just want to let you know it does get a little weird because these are weird times that we're living in. So with that bit of a disclaimer, I suppose, let me go, as they say, Johnny, to the videotape. Thrilled to be joined once again by the fabulous Digby, Heather Parton, who you can find both on her blog, digbysblog.net, and on salon.com, where she writes regularly. And boy, Digby, you've been at this for a long time. And I wonder if through the years you've had the feeling like, wow, it's never been this bad before. And how often that has happened over the years.
Well, it's happened often. I mean, you know, you and I both remember the early days of blogging when we were all just starting doing this stuff, and then we were in the midst, you know, it was just right after 9/11, and yeah. It was all this, we were going into Iraq, and all of that was happening, and that was about as horrible as we probably thought it could be, and it was pretty darned horrible. You know, what I've been thinking a lot about this, actually, because, you know, what we're seeing, the last 20 years have been very eventful. I mean, really eventful times. We're living, you know, it's not a placid period where we're just sort of carrying along, and politics is just sort of, you know, the stakes are sort of, you know, policy-based and minimally kind of, how can I put this, catastrophic. You figure you go from year to year and you try and do a little bit better, and we're fighting amongst ourselves over some, fairly, minor anodyne squabbles. But the last 20 years has been really different. And, from the disastrous, from 9/11, I think I'd go go further. I mean, yeah. Start with the election in 2000, which I think was probably the real beginning of this period that we're in now. I don't mean to discount what was going on before that.
No, and you know
Republicans
what?
Republicans were building their, you know, their resistance, their revolution.
Right, and you know what? You can even go back further, because I saw an item on the news last night that it was the 30-year anniversary of the end of the first Middle East war, the Desert Storm, where I went, in fact, on the eve of Desert Storm. Was it Desert Storm, the first one? I went with Mark and Brian back then over to Saudi Arabia to do a broadcast right before that George H.W. Bush war broke out. So this was there was a thing about the end of it, and that was 30 years ago. So we can actually go back to then, I guess. You know, no matter what era you're living in, we can find some pretty horrible examples of what was happening at the time.
Of course, of course. But I think there's something specific that's been happening, you know, and maybe it's important to go back that other decade as well, because I think that the beginnings of this, something switched that is different than what we had been dealing with before. And I think that what that is, and it's funny because we just went through this whole, you know, the grieving over the death of Rush Limbaugh, right, and all the encomiums that went out on the right wing. I mean, it's really hard to take. But it was really, it was him, and then it was Newt Gingrich sort of picking up this far-right extremist strain in our politics, and the kind of culture war. It's almost like it's a case of arrested development, you know? I mean, these are people who are sort of stuck in a weird adolescent worldview, and Newt Gingrich saw that and sort of weaponized it into partisan politics, and that's really where it took off. Roger Ailes started news, you know, at Fox News right after that, and it's just been growing and growing and growing ever since then. And all the events that have happened in between have been, you know, influenced greatly by this growing undemocratic, you know, far right white nationalist. Again, you know, delayed adolescence kind of issue going on the right. And so, you know, I think that as I look back on that, and I'm looking at what we're dealing with now, and, you know, the vast, you know, the monumental number of problems that we're trying to confront here, and it's a lot. And, you know, and I don't think, you know, it's great to have Donald Trump out of the White House, thank God, and thank God that Mitch McConnell is no longer running the Senate.
Yes.
I mean, it would be even worse. You know, I am thankful for all of that and hopeful that some good stuff's going to come out of this if they can pass, you know, some form of COVID relief and get unemployment extended, et cetera, et cetera. I don't mean to denigrate any of that.
Right.
But from what I'm looking at, you know, I'm seeing a kind of a crumbling of our democracy and our ability to deal with problems in a rational way. It seems like the only way we ever can do anything is out of some chaotic catastrophe like the pandemic or the financial crisis. And that's just, you know, that you can't function that way. We can't continue to function. We need fundamental reforms in order to move forward and have a civilized country. All you have to do is look at the pandemic to see how badly, you know, degraded our government has become.
Right. And I agree with everything you've said there, Digby. But here what I see is a total breakdown of our society. And I trace it all back to the lies. The fact that they will not. We're dealing with a whole party, a good half of the country, actually, who will not agree that the sky is blue and the grass is green. When you can't stipulate to facts, you can't say facts are facts, science is science, here's where we are, this is our starting point, let's talk about our differences from there, then you can't get anything done. When they won't talk about the fact that COVID-19 is killing people. You know, CPAC started this morning, and I don't know if you watched any of the videos that are online. It's horrific. Did you see they made an announcement at the beginning telling people to wear a mask. Did you hear what they had to go through and the reaction they got from the crowd? It was pretty.
They were screaming freedom.
Freedom,
you know,
right.
Like there's Mel Gibson and Braveheart.
Yes.
Because they have to wear a mask.
Right. And then you had Ted Cruz trying to be a comedian. And let me tell you something, the man's not funny. And he's like, how stupid is this? What is the thing with the mask? I don't get it. And then, just the shit that came out of his mouth is so heinous. This is who they're holding up as I don't know what. But here's if I can get this to play. Let's see. Give me 1 second. Good thing I can edit. Here we go. Here's Ted Cruz.
Everybody can get immunized. We can have herd immunity everywhere, and we're going to wear masks for the next 300 years.
What?
And by the way, not just one mask, 2, 3, 4. You can't have too many masks.
What?
How much virtue do you want to signal?
This is supposed to be funny?
This is just dumb.
They're laughing.
No, he's dumb. And they clap. That's the applause line. This is just dumb. I think in this here. Wait, he goes off on Bernie and AOC here, I believe. If it's going to come in. Here we go.
Bernie is wearing mittens.
Yeah, he was warm.
And AOC is telling us she was murdered.
She was murdered? What? What the hell is he talking? I mean, this is embarrassing, and they're cheering him on. You know, he goes on about
media desperately.
Okay, enough of him. There was one thing where he tried to make a joke. He tried to make a joke, and he said, "The Democrats are so shrill," in that voice. It's like, what the? I mean, do they not? They're living. It's like they've fallen through the looking glass. We are dealing with half of the country that is just off their rocker. So you can't debate somebody who's crazy and somebody who won't start at the starting point of here's the facts. Here's where we are. Let's talk about how to move on from here. When they won't stipulate to the facts, you can't have a conversation.
No, that's absolutely right. And by the way, you know, I mean, let me just go back a little bit. You know, MSNBC's Chris Hayes has, you know, made the point about Cruz recently, which I think that demonstrates better than anything, that he's really now just a podcast host and a Twitter troll. He's no longer really a politician. I don't even think he's a talk radio host. It's podcasting, right? Hmm. I mean, it's him sitting there pontificating and, you know, thinking that he's funny and having somebody, I think, sits across from him and laughs at all of his attempted jokes. So, I mean, this is sort of the new template, I think, for a Republican politician. They're kind of all want to be Donald Trump, either a reality TV star,
right,
some kind of entertainer. They think that this is really, really what they're doing. Now, here's the really, really sick consequence of that, and that is that I did a piece on this for Salon this week. You know, up until now, we've been talking about the vaccines. We've been talking about the issue of trying to get vaccines to underserved communities and to a lot of people who have vaccine hesitancy, particularly in the Black community and in the Hispanic communities, because of, you know, past exploitation and bad messaging, mm-hmm, you know, certain kinds of resistance. And they've been doing a lot of work trying to get that done, right? I mean, I think that the administration and various state, you know, state authorities have been trying to do that. But guess what? Since the late fall, they just did a new study at Kaiser, and I think Daily Coast did one too, where they went and did some polling of people. And it turns out that those underserved communities are no longer hesitant at the level that they were. As it's unfolded and as we've watched the vaccines, as with many people, they've gone, well, okay, you know, it seems okay. People aren't dying, you know. I have trust in certain messengers here, and they are becoming much more accepting. There's one group in the country that is refusing vaccines at a tremendously high level, white Republicans.
Wow.
They are refusing to get vaccinated at much higher levels than the minority communities are. So this is what's happening. You've got them joking about masks, thinking that's funny. You've got, you know, the politicians there refusing to wear them in the Congress.
Yep.
You've got Fox News, basically. I mean, Sean Hannity was talking about hydroxychloroquine the other night again. And you have Tucker Carlson basically saying that the vaccine, that the virus is a hoax.
Yeah.
You've got a huge number. It's something like 60% of Republicans are saying, no, I'm not going to get vaccinated.
Unbelievable. I mean, well, you have your
their own voters.
Yeah. You have your elected officials, the people that are supposed to be voices of authority, telling you it's not real. And it's not just, you know, Ted Cruz. It's not just your congressman. It is their former president, the guy that they're, for whatever reason, worshiping, telling you this is all a hoax, the same way he told them that the election was not real. And mm-hmm. I don't think that big lie, as it's been labeled, is being driven home enough. The fact that he has gone on this rampage for the better part of a year before the election, telling you if I lose, it's going to be because they fixed it. And then once he lost, saying, see, it was a hoax. Nothing was real. They believe him. What they don't see, though, is that in 2016, he did the same thing. He kept talking about, yeah, I'll probably lose, but just know it's a hoax. They fixed this. It's a rigged election. He was singing that song until all the returns came in and gave him the victory. And then you never heard about it again.
Strategy, right? It's a strategy for him. I mean, it's clear he had that strategy in 2016.
Yep.
As a way to excuse his loss, he can't accept losing legitimately. It's just not anything. And he knows that he can exploit that idea that it's been stolen from him. And it gives him the opportunity to seek revenge and to collect money and to do all the rest of the things that we're seeing him do now. And he was prepared to do that in 2016 if he lost. And I think he thought he was going
of
to.
Of course,
lose.
We all thought.
We all did. And he just you know, rolled that strategy back out in 2020. And as it happened, he lost. And now we're seeing the results here. I don't know how that they are going to reverse this notion of the big lie in half the country. I mean, these Republicans, I sort of assumed, and I think a lot of people have, that, you know, it would kind of wear off and you'd have a hardcore of the Republicans who would believe it, but most of them would, you know, that maybe a majority would go, okay, right, you know, we lost, and sort of move on. It's not happening.
No.
They are convinced, and a lot of this has to do with the fact that, you know, where they're getting their news and how they're getting their news and the bubble that they're living in, which just is impermeable with facts, as you say, and with proof and with actual real news. I mean, what they're getting is just this propaganda. And, you know, I get it. You know, if you believe something for a long time, it turns out it wasn't true. You feel like kind of a fool and you don't want to admit it, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what's happening. These people really believe this. They have been convinced that the election was stolen, and, you know, and it's justifying a whole bunch of behavior that is really, really awful. I mean, they had Matt Gaetz, your Florida guy, down there this morning, pretty much kind of, you know, he said the Congress is being occupied.
Oh, my God.
And he went on, made a bunch of comments that sounded very much like he was sort of backing another direction.
Right.
It's hard not to see it that way. So, I mean, this is where they are. They are still in that weird kind of violently resentful place that they were on January 6th, and it doesn't seem to really be fading at all, which is scary.
No.
I kind of thought it would.
And in fact, it is mob rule. I never thought I'd say this, but I give Liz Cheney a ton of credit. Still don't like her, don't trust her,
but
good for her for standing up and telling the truth, because you look at Mitch McConnell, right? Mitch McConnell, what a piece of shit he is. So he goes through the whole impeachment. He votes to acquit Trump. And when he's done, he excoriates him. He comes out with the whole thing like he did. I've got one clip the night of the insurrection. And he said,
there's no question that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day.
OK, so and he went on and on after he voted to acquit him of all the horrible things that Trump did. Why he voted to acquit him, I still don't understand. But, you know, he wants to have it both ways. But then last night he goes on Fox, and whoever he was talking to, Brett Baer, I think, asks him this.
Well, there's a lot to happen between now.
I just have the answer here. He asked him, if Trump is the nominee, will you support him?
There's no question. Done. Nope. President Trump.
But this is the one.
Well, there's a lot to happen between now and 24. I've got at least 4 members that I think are planning on running for president, plus some governors and others. There's no incumbent. Should be a wide open race and fun for you all to cover.
But
if the president was the party's nominee, would you support him?
The nominee of the party? Absolutely.
Absolutely. If he's the nominee, will you support him? Absolutely. He just said he's responsible for this siege of the Capitol, for inciting the insurrection. But if he's the party's nominee, absolutely, I'm right there. That's the problem.
Of course it is. And, you know, he gives, you know, smarmy politicians a bad name, right? I mean, you know, a good name, actually. I mean, this behavior is so transparent, right, that he needed to appease a lot of big donors. I mean, there are a lot of big donors in the Republican Party who are appalled by what happened in January.
They should be.
On January 6th, and by what Donald Trump has. And what he was trying to do was say to them, look, don't worry, you know, Trump will be gone. Here I am out there saying it. We'll have somebody new. And he was kind of hinting that in this last clip as well, where, you know, we've got other people running.
Right.
Well, give me a break. Donald Trump is running. You think Mike Pompeo's going to run against him? You think Nikki Haley? I mean, you know, there'll be somebody. I think Liz Cheney might run against him. You know,
I hope so.
With the most cred to do it. But she's not going to get a majority. And if Donald Trump runs again, he will win unless something happens, right? I mean, if he's, you know, been indicted or something, I mean, we can hope.
Yeah.
But assuming that he is in a position to run again, he is going to run again. I mean, or unless he has a health problem.
Well,
he can't.
There's that.
Old, so,
I mean, he is 75 years old, and I don't care what the doctors say, you look at the man, you know he's not in good health. I'm surprised he's still standing.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's probably what most people are sitting around thinking, well, geez, you know, is he going to
kick already, please?
But if he does, and he runs, I believe he will win. And regardless, I mean, even if he's out there, you know, on his deathbed, I think that he would win. This cult of Trump is strong, and it is enduring as long as he is there. Now, people keep thinking, well, I can't remember who it was that said this last night. It was somebody who said that somebody with the last name of Trump will be running in 2024, implying that maybe Don Jr. or Ivanka or something will run. I don't think Trump is Trump. Trump has something magical in himself to these people. God, I cannot fathom what that is. But whatever it is, they really love that guy, and I don't think it translates to Jr., and I don't think it translates to Ivanka on that level. I mean, there'll be some people who like them, but I just don't see that. But if Trump himself is going to run, I mean, I think he'll win. And you have Mitch McConnell out there, you know, trying desperately to have it both ways. He does not have the guts, frankly, that Liz Cheney has. And, you know, look, I'm loath to give her credit because she's just absolutely a nightmare if she were to become president. And I've written about the possibility long before this happened that Liz Cheney might be the first Republican woman president. I see her trajectory has been there for a long time. This is not new.
Right.
And she's made a bet that Trump is going to, that the Trump support is going to collapse, and she'll be there as the hero who stood up to him. I mean, and I'm surprised more people haven't taken that bet, to be honest. I mean, you know, Ben Sasse kind of has.
Adam Kinzinger.
And there are a few.
Right. But you can count them on two hands, probably one hand.
Probably one, really. Yeah. But, you know, a few have made the bet that just going hardcore against Trump, especially on this, you know, on the big lie and doing all that, make sense politically, because he could fold and then you're in this position. But, you know, who knows? And I you know, that's a very risky bet with this Republican Party, because I am not sure that I see that. And I think anybody counting on that happening, counting on his influence waning, I think is being foolish. In the same way, you know, you remember that clip of there were a bunch of people on Meet the Press. I think it was Maggie Haberman, and I can't remember. There were some other people, and one of the people on the panel said, "Well, you know," and this was in 2015. It was early.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Well, you know, Donald Trump might, you know, just might do it. I mean, he's got a lot of, you know, appeal to these people." And the whole panel broke out laughing.
Right.
Like that'll happen, right?
Right.
I mean, that attitude, you know, I feel it happening again.
And that, and exactly.
And laughing this off.
That's what's going on. I mean, I want to pull back the curtain and expose the Wizard of Oz, because I would say 90% of the Republicans in Congress know what's up. They know that Donald Trump is a moron. They know that he has no clue what he's talking about. They know he's unfit for office. They know it's a good thing he's out. Yet they're so afraid of their constituents, whose minds are all bent by the internet, and the propaganda they're reading and the conspiracy theories and the rabbit holes they've gone down, that they're hostage to this other world. It's just insane. And that the fact that they won't stand up, if they would all stand up and say to the American people, "You are being lied to. Stop it. Turn off Fox. Get away from 4chan or Reddit or whatever QAnon site you're on, and go read a newspaper." And yes, you can believe the newspapers, but they won't.
They won't do it. And the same dynamic has happened from the... I mean, let's look back at the Access Hollywood tape, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times did this happen? You know, Trump comes out and says John McCain wasn't a real hero.
Right.
Oh, my God, this terrible. And a bunch of Republicans stood up and said, this will not stand.
That's, you know, it. I mean, that'll end his career. Right. That's it. He's,
you know,
he's toast.
What happens?
Yep.
Nothing.
Nothing.
And then, you know, you have Access Hollywood, and there were people like Jason Chaffetz, you know, right-winger from Utah, saying, "I cannot face my daughters,
right,
you know, if I vote for this man," and on and on and on. It happened over and over and over again. And of course, now it's happened again with the big lie, where there were people on the day of the insurrection, at least, who were standing up, even Lindsey Graham, saying, "Well, I'm getting off the train
right
now, you know,
I can't do this anymore. I'm out. I'm done." And then the next day,
yeah,
he's flying down to Mar-a-Lago to suck Donald's mushroom
dick.
Right.
Exactly. And you know, so you've got this insane sort of, you know, a repetitive dynamic where they get, you know, they take a reflexive stand that any person with any character would say, you know, "Look, this is too much. I can't go with this." And it starts off small. You know, he says something bad, mean about John McCain. He insults what's her name, the woman front that was on Fox in the debate, and says she had blood.
Oh, right.
Her, whatever,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Megyn Kelly. And, you know, these things, and they get all worked up, and then, you know, Access Hollywood, which was grotesque, and,
yep,
you know, going up, find out that he's dealing with Russia, and then Ukraine, and then all of this stuff over and over and over again. We're getting off the bus now. We are done. And then 2 days later, they're right back there. And what that shows is that it takes almost nothing to persuade them that, you know, they can't do that. So what is that, phone calls from constituents? It happens so fast that it can't be from polling.
No.
Who's putting on these people?
Where did it come from? There was something, a phrase that he said during the campaign. Let me see if I have it up on this board. I probably don't. But it was very telling. It was a clip that we laughed at. But I don't know if I have it here. It's where Donald Trump said, "I love the poorly educated."
Yeah.
You're damn right he does, because that's his bread and butter. Because the people who are just not well-read, that are easily led, that are gullible, that, you know, will buy into this stuff. And frankly, now with the pandemic, many of them are stuck at home. They're spending too much time on the internet, and they're crawling down these rabbit holes. And they are believing the most insane things. And that's how it spreads. I mean, the internet is, to you and me, it's invaluable. It's great. But it's also really, really dangerous because I don't know how the saying goes. I always said a little bit of knowledge is a really dangerous thing. When I was on the air, not just the internet, and I took a lot of calls, the worst callers were the people who had a little bit of knowledge about one subject and they thought they knew everything. Well, that's where we are now. These people take a sliver of something and they turn it into I don't know what, but the stuff they come out with is just nuts. And facts don't matter. You make up your own facts now.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, in fact, my husband and I were talking about this the other day, and he's going, you know, so what is this, you know, this weird sort of the counter reality that these people are living in, you know, and he said, you know, what do you think it is? And I said, well, I think it's the internet. Uh-huh. And, you know, it reminds me of, you know, people who go down rabbit holes on the internet. You know, there's a lot of rabbit holes. There's pornography, there's gambling, you know, there's all kinds of ways that you can get caught up in, especially with these sophisticated algorithms that they use to literally lead you down the rabbit hole, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that this is something that is, actually, it's kind of, you know, it's beyond our sort of understanding of how we're being manipulated that way. I mean, there's people like you and me who've been on here for a long time, and I have a BS detector that's pretty finely honed because of it, and it's very rare that I can't sort of sense when something's gone off the rails, because it happens on the left too, right?
All the time.
We're not immune to this kind of thing.
No.
But there's something about this, and particularly I think because of the pandemic and Trump drumming up all this hysteria, that you find a conspiracy theory like QAnon, which sort of grew out of Pizzagate and that whole thing. I mean, this is literally insane.
It is literally insane.
Nothing about it that you can look at and go, well, I can kind of understand why people would think no.
No.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
And now we're hearing the stories of adults who lost their parents to this. It's like the people, there was a woman, Jen something or other, who did a movie a few years ago about my dad was brainwashed by Fox. Well, now it's even worse because it's not just Fox, it's QAnon. And they're buying into this stuff. And there are like support groups of adult children whose parents have gone off the deep end believing this crap.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, all this stuff, people are doing a lot of sort of research on this now. And it's, you know, it's a much more pernicious thing, I think, than people thought, oh, well, it's just a bunch of kooks, right? Aren't they being, you know, they're kind of considered eccentric and weird, but it really isn't. I mean, there were a lot of QAnon people that were at the insurrection in January.
Yep. Oh,
people just really brainwashed by this bizarre thing. And there's so many aspects to it. It's a very complex conspiracy theory that has no real central sort of belief system beyond, you know, the Democrats are, you know, satanic child molesters. You know, I mean, that is sort of the heart of it.
And they take off the kids' faces and eat them. You know,
that's right. You know, that's one of the offshoots is that they and people sort of apparently sort of pick and choose what they want to believe. And like all conspiracy theories, when whatever is supposed to happen, some prediction is supposed to happen, doesn't happen, there's some excuse, and people unwilling to sort of admit they've been duped. It's a rare thing. I mean, we are seeing a few people come out of it kind of going, whoa, I don't know what was going on with me, but I really got lost in that. And now I'm wondering, you know, I'm a little concerned about myself. But that's a rare thing. For the most part, people will continue because they're incapable of sort of admitting that they were fools, essentially. And you know, I get that. But when you've been drawn into something this bizarre, you know, you need to take a look in the mirror. And there are millions and millions of these people out there. And it's all part of the Donald Trump cult. I mean, QAnon is a subset of the Trump cult, which is also a cult. And it's a cult of personality, which has a long political sort of definition, you know, an old political definition, which, you know, you have a demagogue, which he is, and you have people who sort of fall into this, you know, hero worship for this demagogue who's telling them the things they want to hear. and it created this cult, or I should say, Donald Trump sort of solidified the cult that had been built and building over the course, as we were talking about at the beginning.
Well, and
over
Rush Limbaugh,
several
right.
decades,
and people like Rush Limbaugh helped build it, and Donald Trump came in because you need some kind of antichrist like leader, right? And he's the perfect candidate there.
Exactly. In fact, when he was running in 2016, there was a big article, I think it was in the Atlantic, Vanity Fair, something like that, that was an interview with a bunch of his, staffers, and one of whom was Sam Nunberg, who we're all familiar with on TV, who was, was in and out of the Russia scandal. He was charged with listening to talk radio and writing up notes. Trump would never listen to such a thing, but he wanted to know what they were saying. And so Nunberg listened to thousands of hours, and he would write up talking points for Trump. This was in 2014 when he was just thinking of jumping in. And he had decided that he was going to run as a Republican, not an independent, after the success of the birtherism thing, right?
Wow.
He started getting a lot of fans from that.
Mm-hmm.
So, he had Nunberg do that, and that explains why when he was first on the trail that he'd throw out some weird thing like, and Common Core, we've got to get rid of Common Core.
Right.
He had no idea what he was saying.
He doesn't even know what Common Core is.
Picked up from talk radio.
Right. Right. And, yeah. And that's how he works. I mean, that's all he knows. I mean, the everything about him was this manufactured story. The picture they paint of the guy who hosted The Apprentice was not Donald Trump. He was a bankrupt, failed businessman that they built the story around, and they made him into this media figure. And the poorly educated people,
I love the poorly educated.
They love him. And they think he can do no wrong. Well, oh my God, all you have to do is listen to the man. He's, ugh. And so, I'm not a religious person. I don't have religion in my life. I'm not, Jewish by heritage, but nothing. I don't do that. But the story about, the Antichrist, that there's and that they used to say that about Obama, and I never quite got it. I see it in Trump. He's exactly what they were looking for.
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you?
Mean,
and that's another one of the most inexplicable aspects of Trump's appeal, that his strongest group of followers,
the evangelical
numbers, are evangelical conservative evangelical Christians. I mean, and you're going, what? This guy is about as religious as my cat.
Corinthians,
but,
right? And you got Joe Biden, who's a religious man. Now, I don't get. I don't know if Catholic is not considered Christian. Christian, again, that's so not my world. But Adam Kinzinger's family, who wrote that letter to him, basically disowning him, saying he's about Trump. He's a good Christian man. Yeah, if that's your bottom line, Joe Biden, who just brought back, an office of faith to the White House. No, but he's a religious man. If you want somebody who has God in their life, that's your guy, not Trump. 2 Corinthians.
Of course. And what it exposed, of course, is that this conservative evangelical identity isn't really about, the Bible as we understand it.
But
it is
what
about
is it?
Something else.
Right.
It's a tribal identity. And, Donald Trump paid fealty to it, and he pretended that he respected it, which, of course, he doesn't really.
Nope.
And they liked him for all the same reasons that the non-religious people who liked him liked him. He's a celebrity.
Yeah.
He's wealthy.
Oh, God.
He had a model wife. He had been on TV. He had created, over the course of his lifetime, had created an image which, for some, in America, apparently there is a vast number of people who really like a phony, rich, white guy who is obnoxious and rude and racist.
Yeah.
That's all. What can I say?
Right. And I can get that. I mean, one of the little clips I watched from the opening hour or so of CPAC, I don't know who the man was because I didn't watch the whole thing, but it was a big fat black man who was going on about being at the Capitol on January 6th. And everybody was there. BLM was there. Antifa was there. It's like, bullshit. No, they weren't. The lies just come so naturally to them. And these people are just taking it in like a sponge. And again, so that brings me back to the first point. You can't argue, you can't debate with somebody who's deranged, who just won't accept fact as fact. And that's where we are. We're pitted against people who have no concept of reality and will not admit that a fact is a fact. And so we're at a, how do you, you can't negotiate with people like that.
Well, and I'll just throw something else out there, and this is, has to do with the elite Republicans who are part of the establishment and those people in Washington and many of the Republican leaders around the country. Those are not the poorly educated, right?
No.
These are people who are all they know what they're
they know
doing.
Better.
And what they have learned is that hypocrisy is no longer operative for them, and they have learned that being completely shameless bears no price. And as a result, they can go along with this stuff with a straight face. Ted Cruz can roll off to Cancun during an emergency in his state, come back, fly to Florida the next week and make jokes about going to Cancun,
right.
Make jokes about the pandemic, because they are shameless. And when you have a group of elites, or Mitch McConnell talking out of both sides of his mouth, completely shameless. He has no, you know, it's like, whatever. I'll say whatever I want in the moment that's going to serve me, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, people like you and me, we sit here and go, are you kidding? You hypocritical ass. You know,
right.
How can you say that? And yet, but they don't care. They just don't care, because there's no price to pay for them. There's no social ostracization. They are rewarded in their jobs. They're rewarded by their constituents. And all of that is part of the reason why this group of, you know, frankly, brainwashed people, this large contingent in our society that are brainwashed by all this stuff, that's why these elites don't feel that they have to do anything.
No.
There's no price for them to pay for anything. Now, I would have thought, and this is something that kind of struck me as surprising, which these people rarely surprise me, is that January 6th, that those people were crashing into that building, and I think they would have killed it. They didn't care who was a Republican.
No. They
were looking for Mike Pence and screaming to hang him.
Yep.
I mean, and he's definitely one of them.
Right.
So I
and your average rank, your average rank and file,
bit, didn't.
The average rank and file Republican, they probably don't even know. Yeah, they'd recognize Ted Cruz and maybe Rand Paul, but they don't know, you know, Joe Republican House member from Wisconsin. They would have killed whoever they found. They went after the cops. They were beating them with their Blue Lives Matter flagpoles.
I know. So, you know, there they were. I mean, they were beating people with the American flag.
Yeah.
And you know, had no compunction or any thought about the idea that, hey, you know, we're supposed to be the people who are in favor of the cops. They would have killed any of them.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you
and
have
they
thought
did.
that kind of crazed mob violence on the part of, you know, ostensibly their own constituents, which, by the way, Lauren Boebert, that Republican from Colorado who needs to carry a gun with her everywhere she goes.
Yeah.
You know, she even said on the floor before, as the insurrection was unfolding, you know, those are my constituents out there and they're unhappy. You know,
God.
You know, we're all unhappy about things, Lauren. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm unhappy too, but I'm not going to storm the Capitol. Right? That's what's so frightening. You would think that's the worst thing, the worst attack on our democracy, seriously, ever. And that they're still lying about it. Well, it wasn't us. It was, you know, false flag. It was Antifa.
Right.
It's always Antifa. It was not Antifa. And they know it. And yet they're still making excuses. And the next time, they will get killed. And do you know, they're talking about two more things. March 4th is apparently the day that the QAnoners believe that Donald Trump is going to be inaugurated. I don't know what's going to happen on March 4th, but I'm not leaving my house. And then the other... If you wonder why they hadn't set a date for the State of the Union address yet? I was just thinking about that. It's like, it should be like now. Because there's a threat that they're going to blow up the Capitol when there's a joint session of Congress gathered to hear the State of the Union address. These threats are out there. And frankly, I don't trust the law enforcement. Something like 30 some odd Capitol Police have been suspended under investigation because of their roles on January 9th, on January 6th. There's so much to this we don't know. The two cops who committed suicide, what do you think that's about? They were complicit in this. I'm not saying all of them. I'm sure most of the cops put their lives on the line, but there were enough of them who were part of this nonsense, as now they're finding they're in the military too. This is scary times.
Well, you know, recall, I mean, they put this in the impeachment, in the latest impeachment. They talked about the black Capitol police officer who that night after it was over was sitting there
crying,
in the Capitol saying, you know, I am so sick of this. This is ridiculous. You know, these people were out to kill us. And he was talking, you know, he was taking on his own colleagues there in the Capitol police.
Yep.
We know this. We know that there's complicity in all of that. And we also know that this constant threat of violence, which is out there with these people. I mean, you know, we hear it all the time. You had that guy, what was his name? Gabriel Sterling.
From who was
Florida,
honest.
Who stood up and said, you know, if you don't
Georgia.
Stop it, somebody's going to get shot.
Yep.
Somebody got shot.
That's right.
I mean, you know, and this is the kind of, that violence is hanging over everything, right? It's kind of like a cloud that hangs over all of our politics. And it's not coming, Black Lives Matter isn't out there, you know, threatening, you know, Congress people.
No.
They aren't out there trying to stop the vote or crash, you know, storm the Capitol. That's not what they're doing. They're protesting and marching against, you know, for a cause. And that's American tradition. That's a very different thing than this violent, you know, threats and violent, it's not even a protest, really.
Right.
I mean, this is basically intimidation, right? I mean, the people who went into the Michigan State House, that trial where they went in there and then there was that whole crew who was threatening to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that is, you know, this is in the back of people's minds as they're thinking about, you know, how far do I want to go up against Trump or these people? I mean, it's one of the reasons why Liz Cheney looks kind of, you know, ballsy. Doing what she's doing, because she's not backing down. I mean, the thing she did this week where she was standing there next to Kevin McCarthy and they asked her, do you think Trump should go to CPAC? And she said, no,
no.
I don't think he should be representing the Republican Party. And everybody kind of gasped.
Right, and Steve Scalise is standing next to her and his head went down and he shook his head like, oh, God, she's going to get killed. Because they're afraid of people.
I just have to reiterate, because I know that your audience is one that is not fans of Liz Cheney, and it's very difficult to be someone giving her these kinds of kudos, but you just kind of, whatever her reasoning is, the fact that she's so unique is and that you have to comment on it is important. I mean,
I know.
Who else is doing that?
Nobody. Well, Kissinger, but he's not on the same level as Liz Cheney. She's the highest ranking Republican who's willing to say, wait a minute, look at what you're doing. And as much as I despise the woman and everything she stands for, I have respect for her. As Ali G would say, respect.
Right.
So,
You know, and this is just this one thing. And I mean, look, this is what we're talking about. When you say, you know, look, we're not dealing from the same set of facts and they're off in their alternate reality and we're sort of trying to function with this weird, you know, situation that we're in. When it comes to the democracy, there used to be, which comes to just, you know, democracy, American democracy, there was a belief, you know, a belief that it was important You know, and let's just leave it that simply. It's important that democracy be respected on some level. And yes, there were hypocrites. There were vote suppressors. There were people who, you know, all kinds of awful sort of manipulations of our voting system. That's nothing new about that. But the idea that it was important and that you had to pay respect to it and that it was something that we aspired to, even in our worst moments, was something that people would have been afraid to, you know, to say something against, right? They would be afraid to reject that. And Liz Cheney coming forward and just saying, look, what happened on January 6th was, you know, an insurrection that was instigated by the President of the United States that disqualifies him from being the leader of the Republican Party. It's nothing more than that that she's saying. And there was a time, I really believe, that most of the Republicans would have said, okay, bridge too far, you're right, that's it.
Right.
And they all said it that night, right? I shouldn't say all of them, but a bunch of them said it. And then, of course, just like we said, like Access Hollywood or whatever, they fell back and went, well, never mind. You know, we're sorry. we love you, Donald. You
right.
You're our man.
Hey, Digby, I'm just now seeing something really, really disturbing. Now, you're on the phone, so you can't see the video that I'm putting up or the image that I'm putting up. But I peeked over at Twitter, and I've seen a few times in the past while we've been talking, photos of the stage at CPAC popping up and people commenting on it. And I'm going to put up for the people who are watching on YouTube, the image of the CPAC stage. Here's a comment from somebody who goes by the name of Hami. He's a graphic designer, photographer, whatever. And he wrote, having worked with Norse and Elder Footwork iconography for years, I'm quite alert to the glyph shapes and their associations in the modern world and history. So why is the CPAC 2021 stage an Odal rune, O-D-A-L rune, and specifically one with serifs or wings that was used by the SS? And if you look at it, it does. It looks like Nazi symbolism. This
Wow. This
stuff goes on all the time with these people. There's a lot of Nazi symbolism. And now that they call it out, I'm looking at the design of the stage. And oh, yeah, it looks like part of a swastika. This is frightening God. What's going on. Yeah, you got to look at the stage. Look at I'm going to copy you on this tweet. I'm going to tag you on the tweet so you can see what I'm talking about. But it is frightening. And I'm afraid that these people, these poorly educated people, are being brainwashed and taken down a more nefarious rabbit hole than even the stupid QAnon stuff.
It's entirely possible, you know, I mean, and it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, I remember seeing, you know, we just talked about Lauren Boebert, the congresswoman with the, you know, with the guns. She was just elected from Colorado. There were pictures of her with all these people standing on, it wasn't on the Capitol building, but it was in Colorado with all these supporters of hers, and they're all flashing the white power.
Oh, God.
I mean, and like, you know, well, okay, I guess that's normal now that our Congress people are hanging out with avowed white supremacists.
Right.
Because they are obviously avowed white supremacists because they're flashing the white supremacy. You know, it cannot be coincidence that they're all doing that at the same time, right?
Right.
So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that's happening, and it's becoming really normalized into mainstream Republican politics. It isn't anymore. I mean, look, CPAC, you know, we used to think of it as being this weird, you know, kind of fringe event of young, you know, firebrand Republicans. It's always been disgusting. It's always been despicable. This is nothing new with them. But they are moving into a new sort of a new era here. And if they're starting to use, you know, symbolism, and which is very powerful, you know, I mean, these are totems. They're you know, it's iconography for a reason.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are using that stuff, and I mean, it may even be subconscious, but that's only
or
because
not.
They're online with all these Nazis and white supremacists.
That's right.
And this stuff becomes, they look at it and go, no, and I'm being generous.
I know.
They may
I know you are.
Doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it is just something that they went, oh, I love that. You know, that looks great.
Right.
And it's because of the company they keep, let's put it that way.
Wow. You know, Digby, I always lament when you come on the show that we don't have long enough, because we always start like at the bottom of the hour and we go to the top of the hour. Well, today we had to tape. And of course, here we're going on. We're coming on close to an hour. So I'm not going to keep you much longer. We could keep going because this, you know, it's both fascinating and frightening at the same time. I really don't know. And I thought that once Trump was out of the White House, that maybe we would move in the right direction, that people would see, okay, with a reasonable human being in the White House, that they'll go, oh, yeah, that's what it's supposed to be, that we'd come back to some sort of normalcy. The night of the 6th, when I heard Lindsey Graham, I believe he had been drinking a little bit, but who wouldn't be after the day they had been through, saying, I'm done, I'm out, I can't do this anymore. I almost went had tears in my eyes. I mean, I was that close. It's like, thank you, finally, they're going to come to reality. I really thought we had turned a corner. And then he flies off to Mar-a-Lago to suck his dick. Mitch McConnell, when he, you know, went off on how Trump is responsible for this, he brought it on himself. And now today he says, oh, absolutely. If he's the nominee, I'm right there. We're fucked. We are just fucked and not in a good way.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, I really, really worry about how this is going to go. I mean, it's you know, maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe some fever will break. Maybe they'll get tired of it. Maybe they'll get bored. Maybe if the economy comes back and Biden takes care of the pandemic effectively and people feel better about their lives, maybe a lot of them will just move on and find something else political, but something else political to obsess about. But, you know, all of that would work if Donald Trump would go away.
Yeah.
But he's not going away. He is doing anything but going away. And I just have to say before we go, mm-hmm. I mean, I think people should be aware of this. And they most of your listeners undoubtedly are. But Donald Trump has one overriding worldview. And it is that he believes that everything requires payback.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Liberty University and spoke before a bunch of, you know, these young Christian college kids in 2012. And he said, I have two words for you, two pieces of advice. The first is get a prenup. The second is get even. I mean, that's a bunch
God.
Of Christian kids.
Right.
So, I mean, this goes all the way back, too. I mean, there's a video of him with Charlie Rose back in 1990 where he's sitting there going, I believe in revenge, that vengeance is everything. You know, if you don't do that, if you don't tell them you're a sucker, if you don't get people back, if you don't get payback. Now, that guy is not going to, you know, just run around for the next 2 years saying, you know, the election was stolen from me and oh, woe is me. It's just terrible. He's
looking for payback.
That is just who he is. So, you know, we can pretend like he's just, you know, old news. And I hope he is. And I'm not paying, you know, I'm trying not to write about him all the time.
Uh-huh. I'm trying not to talk about him all the time.
Yep. Lower profile. I am sick of him. I wrote about him for five solid years, day after day after day. And I couldn't be more tired of a person. But I'm not a fool enough to think that he is not still a part of our situation and is still hugely influential and may be at the center of Republican politics for some time to come. And that means he's at the center of our politics.
That's right.
We've only got the two parties, unfortunately.
It is depressing, and I hate to leave people like this. It's a Friday afternoon. We got the weekend here.
But
it's the weekend of CPAC, which is going to be aired on television, and they're going to carry his stupid speech, which is infuriating. I wish we could just ignore him, but unfortunately, with he got 71 million votes, you can't ignore him. 74 million. This is, you know, we've got to be vigilant, and I don't know what the answer is. Just don't be complacent. I guess.
Yeah. Don't be complacent. That's the answer. And, you know, try to, you know, sort of keep him in perspective and do what you can. But honestly, watching these Republicans just go down there and genuflect to him and the stuff they're saying at CPAC and promoting the big lie and all of that. I mean, it's just, I feel that it ain't over.
Far from over.
You know, I think we got a way to go.
On that note, Digby, thank you as always. Find Digby, of course, at digbysblog.net. That's the new home of Digby's Hullabaloo, and of course, salon.com, and on Twitter at Digby56. Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you, and it had been too long.
My pleasure. I would, only because it's fun to talk to you. The subject matter is, unfortunately, still pretty,
I know, it sucks.
Grim.
But, you talk about the subject matter you're given, not the one you were wishing you
exactly.
had.
Exactly.
That's how it works. All right. Big thanks to Digby for being here. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Sometimes you just need to have one of those kind of conversations. And try to stay away from the TV this weekend because, it's going to be CPAC. And they are nuts. And the stage is something out of the SS. When I say we've fallen through the rabbit hole, I'm not kidding. There's something seriously, seriously wrong here. And I don't know that we can get out of it. Sorry, I wanted to leave you with a more positive note. So I'll tell you what. After this, well, have dinner or something. And then in an hour or so, go over to bradblog.com. Or at 8 p.m. Eastern, listen to the Progressive Voices Network. And you'll hear tonight's broadcast with another conversation that you should hear with Ian Millhauser from Vox about these two cases that the Supreme Court is going to hear on Tuesday that could put the final nail in the coffin of the Voting Rights Act. Just when you think we're coming out of this crap, this shit happens. I don't get it. All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Try to unplug from this kind of stuff. Do something. Paint. Pick up a paintbrush. Join me in the painting world. I'm happy to paint for you. All right. Thanks. See you later. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, the long-awaited decision by the Senate parliamentarian on including the proposed minimum wage increase in the coronavirus stimulus bill was finally announced, though it wasn't the one we were hoping for. Elizabeth McDonough ruled Thursday that Democrats cannot include raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour in the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. She said the proposal did not meet the requirements to be included in the package under the budget reconciliation process, which is what Democrats are using to pass the stimulus bill with just a simple majority. Even if they did have approval to include the provision in the bill, it was still a tough go. Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema both opposed raising the minimum wage, which has been at $7.25 an hour since 2009. Manchin suggested an $11 minimum wage instead. Now, this ruling only applies to the Senate. Nancy Pelosi announced that the House will hold a vote on the relief package Friday as is, with the minimum wage provision still included. There's also an effort by progressives to push Vice President Kamala Harris to use her constitutional role as president of the Senate to overrule the parliamentarian. Congressman Ro Khanna of California tweeted Thursday night, "I'm sorry. An unelected parliamentarian does not get to deprive 32 million Americans the raise they deserve. This is an advisory, not a ruling. Vice President Harris needs to disregard and rule a $15 minimum wage in order. We were elected to deliver for the people. It's time we do our job." Wow. Others are sending out similar statements, but the White House is against that idea. What happens next? I don't know. But Bernie Sanders isn't giving up. He already said that he'll file an amendment to take tax deductions away from large corporations that don't pay above a $15 an hour minimum wage.
The other big breaking news story from Thursday night, the Biden administration announced that the U.S. military carried out airstrikes on a site in Syria used by two Iranian-backed militia groups. The strikes marked the first known military action under Biden and were in response to rocket attacks on American forces in the region over the past 2 weeks. A February 15th rocket attack on coalition forces near the Erbil International Airport in Iraqi Kurdistan killed a civilian contractor and injured 9 others. Iran denied involvement in the attack. The U.S. strikes come as Washington and Tehran are positioning themselves for negotiations about the nuclear deal, potentially complicating an already shaky process. So more details about the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol building are coming to light as hearings begin. On Thursday, the House Appropriations Committee heard for the first time testimony from the acting Capitol Police Chief, Yogananda Pittman, about what unfolded on that day. She backed up the testimony we heard Tuesday in the Senate from her predecessor. That would be former Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund. He testified that he had requested backup from the National Guard by 12:58 p.m. on January 6th and continued to call for the next hour. In that same Senate hearing on Tuesday, the former House Sergeant at Arms, Paul Irving, insisted that he'd never received a request for National Guard backup until 1:28. Pittman also testified that 35 officers are being investigated for their behavior on the day of the insurrection. 6 have been suspended and had their police powers revoked. We need more information on that. And finally, Chief Pittman revealed that militia groups tied to the January 6th uprising have reportedly discussed a desire to, quote, blow up the Capitol.
We know that members of the militia groups that were present on January 6th have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible with a direct nexus to the State of the Union, which we know that date has not been identified. So based on that information, we think that it's prudent that Capitol Police maintain its enhanced and robust security posture until we address those vulnerabilities going forward.
And now we've learned that the U.S. attorney in D.C. is investigating whether members of Congress gave recon tours of the Capitol to some of these insurrectionists before the January 6th siege. The House on Tuesday passed the Equality Act. It would prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The vote was 225-206, with just 3 Republicans joining all the Democrats in voting yes. Now, the House previously passed this bill back in 2019, but the Senate, then led by Republicans, blocked it. The prospects for its passage are somewhat better this year because Democrats now control the House, the Senate, and the White House. But Republicans could still block the legislation in the Senate, which is split 50-50. Democrats would need 60 votes to get past a potential filibuster. Just one more reason why we need to get rid of the filibuster. So, President Biden spoke with the Saudi King Salman on Thursday, pledging to work to make bilateral ties between the two countries, quote, as strong and transparent as possible, thus according to the White House. Biden's conversation with the king, their first since Biden became president last month, came ahead of the expected release of a U.S. intelligence report on the 2018 murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. Sources have said that the report, a declassified version of a top secret analysis, identifies the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, as the person who approved Khashoggi's killing. Saudi Arabia has, of course, denied that the 35-year-old Crown Prince had anything to do with it. Sure. From the Hypocrisy is Deep files, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Thursday night went on Fox and said that he would absolutely support Donald Trump if he's the 2024 Republican nominee for president. What?
If the president was the party's nominee, would you support him?
The nominee of the party? Absolutely.
Mitch McConnell said that it was Trump who was responsible for provoking the January 6th attack on the Capitol.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. And having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories, and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting into the largest megaphone on planet Earth.
That is the sound of a man with no spine. Somebody get Mitch McConnell to surgery quick. And finally, on Tuesday, the Supreme Court will hear two cases that could be the undoing of what's left of the Voting Rights Act. I'm guest hosting the broadcast on Friday, and we'll speak with Vox's Ian Millhiser about just that issue. Democrats are trying to protect our rights to vote. They're trying to pass the For the People Act. It's H.R. 1 in the House and S.1 in the Senate. And it would stop partisan gerrymandering, limit money in politics, expand voting access, provide for automatic voter registration across the country, and require paper ballots. It would also require that early voting be made available, and it would expand mail-in voting and authorize $1 billion for upgrades to state voting systems. Polling shows that it's very popular on a bipartisan level as well. 68% of Americans approve of the reforms in the bill. 16% oppose the measure. Again, Democrats passed a version of H.R. 1 in the previous Congress, but then Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell refused to take it up. Now, every House Democrat supports the bill, while the Republicans, of course, oppose it. To try to stop the bill from becoming law, Republicans are launching a full-throated defense of the filibuster. The filibuster is a tradition that enables a minority in the Senate to stop legislation unless it can garner 60 votes. It's not in the Constitution, just saying. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.